Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. My name is Susan Dobie Chase, and today I am thrilled to host the amazingly talented Lauren Bullock. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing great.
Great. I'm really glad to hear that. I truly am. So you're calling in from North Carolina. What's it like there today?
D.C., actually. But, like, I lucked out in that we were supposed to have all this snow, and it looks like that didn't happen.
Oh, good.
Because I am, as you said, like a southerner at heart. And so I'm definitely afraid of snow.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm in the upper Midwest, and I just think that it would crush my spirit a little bit if we actually got more of it that stayed. So it was flurries here the other day, but none of it stuck, so that's good. I was wondering, you know, lately, you've been doing a lot as a columnist and as a poet, and there's something called Killing Joke that has been of interest lately. I was wondering if you could fill us in on that.
Yeah, so I'm a columnist for the website Black Nerd Problem, and we talk about pop culture from different intersectional perspectives. And so there's a comic called The Killing Joke, which was written in the 80s and has some problematic scenes in it. And I wrote a column about that, which is interesting because as a poet, I'm, like, very used to, like, calling out things and saying, you know, like, hey, this doesn't treat women right, or, like, hey, this doesn't treat survivors right, and not getting as much response. But it turns out on the internet, when you write about Batman in any capacity, all of the angry dude bros, like, come out. That's been very interesting. I've never kind of had that response to my work. It's definitely two very different mediums.
How interesting is that? That Batman got all sorts of interest from the public. What was the column about? What did they say?
Yeah, so the column, the comic, like, features kind of these torture scenes in it because of the Joker and mainly Barbara Gordon, who's Batgirl, experiences these. And they're making a cartoon of it, Bruce Timm, who, like, made Batman the Animated Series, and, like, Mark Hamill, who was, like, the original Joker, Kevin Conroy, who was the original Batman. It's a big deal. But nobody has indicated that they're trying to remove these scenes. And if anything, they're, like, talking about an R rating. And so the column was basically, like, after years of, like, survivors and, like, allies and people saying, like, hey, this is really problematic, why has DC Comics not said anything? People just, they're like, oh, like, well, how dare you hate The Killing Joke? Like, that's not what I said. it's very much like, you know, oh, you had an opinion, and you're a woman, and it was about comics. I'm going to call you
right.
Names now. Like, that's been the majority of the response, which is very shocking. Part of it, I think, is because Ta-Nehisi Coates ended up retweeting the article, and so I think that, like, launched it into some interest in the eyes of some people.
Well, I hope that you survive all the commentary. I'm sure there are some people who are really down with what you're saying too. And
That's been the best part of it.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it is to have other people who, you know, validate you. In fact, I was hoping that as we go on here, that I would be able to prevail upon you to read a piece of your work for us, because I'm really excited to have you on the show, and I'd love to hear something.
Absolutely. So, yes, let me get into this first piece. It's entitled Traffic, and it starts with a quote. Discrimination, like traffic through an intersection, may flow in one direction, and it may flow in another. Kimberly Crenshaw on intersectionality. After another accident, I'm lying on an operating table. The doctors, all wearing my face. Before anyone can speak, my whiteness whispers like cancer. You never talk about me anymore. Just the way I like my blackness interrupts. There are more important things at stake here. My Vietnamese stays as silent as a model minority. My Vietnamese knows survivors skip a generation, can still feel the impact of an almost grandfather's fist travel the spine of my lineage, my survivalhood, will still apologize. My survivorhood is afraid to call itself rape victim because then it's just asking for more questions. My asexuality says, my womanhood won't move out of the way. My womanhood calls itself black woman when we're playing oppression roulette. My depression asks if I kill myself. Is a lynching, a slave rebellion, or the Vietnamese conflict all over again? My Vietnamese knows inevitable violence. The same way my blackness knows, all it takes is one drop. I own you. My whiteness smiles, says, I've been telling her that for years. My whiteness knows this is how you keep the chaos in line. Just label it patriotism, gun rights, defending democracy, and you can sacrifice entire populations alive. My American loves me some capitalism. My African American is still subject to genocide for capitalism. My womanhood and my whiteness are in a relationship called mainstream feminism. They throw sex positivity parties where my asexuality and my blackness aren't invited because, I'm sorry, some of us can't reclaim the word slut without rebranding ourselves Jezebel. My Vietnamese can't reclaim the word slut because me love you long time is still a punchline. Intersectionality means uncovering your fingerprints in the wreckage and wondering if this time you are the victim or the one who caused the hit and run. My skin is a target, but it is also privileged. My lightness says I can still be beautiful even if I don't understand how. My class constructs a bulletproof shield from a savings account. My academia corrects others' English so they don't profile a foreigner. And mine, my able and cisgendered body means a public restroom will never feel like a minefield. Erasure is not always a car crash worth bragging about, but internal bleeding is still the result of trauma. Our self-hate wants us to reopen the scars. Our self-hate was taught to us by people who don't and do look like us. Intersectionality is not the scalpel at the operating table. It means learning how to heal the other inside of us.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I really
love that. How did you come up with the, well, one thing I really love about it is the form of it, you know, how you have different names for the different parts of yourself. Did you hear something like that, or did you come up with it kind of organically, or where did that come from? I love that aspect.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, I can't think of any at the moment, but there are definitely poems that are floating around that, like, talk about different parts, or I've seen, specifically even in slam, people do pieces where they have, like, the persona, like, the multiple voices there. But I think a large part of it has just been expressing how I felt kind
mm-hmm.
of growing up and, like, having these disparate pieces that feel like entire entities in themselves that aren't connected.
Right, right, and how they meet in the middle of that intersection. Just beautiful. What brought the poem on? Is there some sort of moment where you felt that this is something I'm going to write about, or what spurred on the thought of this poem?
Yeah, so I've been writing poems about being kind of being mixed race since about high school, I'd say, like, kind of exploring that identity. But it wasn't until kind of like later in college that I started reading literature about, you know, like Kimberly
mm-hmm.
Crenshaw's writing on intersectionality and like the idea that there are places that like these things can meet in places
right.
and not just constantly feeling like, you know, like you're running back and forth. I also read a lot of pieces by Trudy of Gradient Lair, who's a fantastic writer, artist, and blogger. And just reading like a lot of these pieces on just where different identity and like how that affects your perception. And I had that kind of churning in me for a while.
Yes.
And finally was able to like kind of put it down. And I think there's also like ways in which I got super involved in slam poetry for a while. Provided poetry slam. And I got kind of fed up with like feeling that only part of me was in the room at a time. And I wanted a poem that could bring as much of me to, you know, to people at once.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I know exactly what you mean about being in an audience and being a performer and realizing that you haven't really, that there are parts of you that aren't there, that there are parts of you that you wish you could talk about, that you like to keep hidden in different areas of your life, you know, in different settings and different company. And I can really respect that. I'm glad that you brought that to light. In fact, you've been so involved so much with so many different things with the slam poetry world, the National Poetry Slam, Southern Fried Poetry, and then Cupsy. Tell me about what those venues have done for you. Which ones have allowed you the most freedom? What was it like to compete at those different levels?
Oh, freedom, such a good question. I love that. I've organized for Islets and Brave New Voices as well, too. So have done a lot. I think as far as freedom goes, I definitely have to say working with Brave New Voices. I haven't competed in Brave New Voices, but just like being, and like anybody who's ever been a part of that culture kind of knows what I'm talking about, is that there's just such an intentionality about this space.
Yes.
Which isn't to say that that's not there for like Cupsy or for NPS, et cetera. But because you have youth there, like you have to be even more intentional. And so everybody there then reflects kind of this you know, agreement on what culture we're going to bring. And I think it's much harder to maintain that, like the older competitors get, just because, you know, you can come in at like any age, right? And that means you come in with a certain amount of baggage that, you know. I definitely say as far as like freedom, but, you know, like I also started out with Cupsy. So that'll always feel like home to me. That was the first time back in 2012 that I competed. And, yeah, I can still remember just, like, looking around being like, oh, my gosh, I saw that person on YouTube. And, oh, my gosh, I, like, didn't know people from California, like, also did this. And this is what they sound like. And, you know, like,
right.
Just, like, just the first time you're like, and really just being able to like go up to people, especially when you're, you know, go make that transition from like local to national and be like, oh my gosh, I don't know when I'll see you again, but like, hey, I've never heard anything like you, just what you just wrote and like just presented on the stage. Definitely those two. I do love my So Fried Fam. I'm definitely a Southerner, there's no doubt about that, and, like, love PSI events. I think Cupsy and B&B are probably my favorite.
Nice. And I, you know, I've worked with a lot of young people discovering their voices and finding spoken word, and I know exactly what you mean about just having it be an incredible, freeing experience. It totally is. People, I think that there's something really special about seeing someone young, finding their words, finding a way to express who they are and what they believe in. And it is just so incredibly beautiful. It is indeed.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, that's, I have to say, like, if there are moments that I get, like, burnt out, I, like, always it's the youth open mics or the youth slams that, like, revitalize me.
Mm-hmm. Me too. And I understand exactly what you mean by that. If there are people out there who haven't attended a youth event but have the opportunity to, again, like Lauren just said, it is revitalizing to see the beauty that comes out of that.
Oh, yeah. So if anybody's, going to be in the D.C. area, July 12th, Brave New Voices, the International Youth Poetry Festival, is going to be in D.C. Finals are going to be at the Kennedy Center. So definitely look up bravenewvoices.org.
Great, great. Thank you for saying that. And if you are in the D.C. area or can get to the D.C. area, it is amazing to witness. It's like nothing else. We're about halfway through the show, Pat, a little bit more than halfway through the show. I was hoping that maybe I could get you to read a second piece, Lauren.
Absolutely. So I could not do a show, especially if you was the host, without getting a nerdy piece in. So this is one of my newer pieces entitled "Explaining to My Sidekick Why Superheroes Should Stay Single." Look, unless you're one of the lucky few, between preventing the plane crash and hunting down the banana-themed thief, you're going to always say I love you too fast. Remember, it's only panic, an anarchy of chemicals battering your brain. But no, you won't remember. You'll mistake it for the real thing, and maybe it will be for the hour before the next war, long enough for the speedster to run away with your heart. Dame the genius, if you want to overthink and underfeel, think you're into the demigod, not after having to cram that massive messiah complex into your calendar, because there's too many catastrophes happening to call you first. Or maybe you're the type who goes for the guy with invisibility powers, whose transparent insecurities you won't see until his creepy ass won't stop disrespecting your boundaries. Like, no, when I say I want you gone, I don't mean just the appearance of absence. Quit following me home, Earl. Let's say you never actually sleep with the shapeshifter, mostly because of the whole trans-dimensional space battle you'll have to fight, but you'll know, and she'll know. And that'll be enough tension to drive a storyline for a few years. When the day finally comes and he stops texting back, the world could be on fire. Yeah, but you'd know, wouldn't you? And it won't stop there. After the breakup, you're going to show up to work swearing that you're over it, and he will be there every time. It only gets better when the whole league figures it out, the same way they'll tell you that the next one is a total mortal civilian, no gadget belt or any, unapologetically fill you in on all their speculations. They'll be like, hey, we're grabbing drinks at headquarters, maybe play Monopoly. Arm Fall Off Boy will be there, and you'll have to be like, nah, I got an active volcano to thwart. Which won't be a lie, since you will feel exactly like vomiting magma straight into his stupid, smiling face. There will be that one time. The newbie sidekicks rush up to you at once, wanting to know who would win in a battle, a bear or a shark, ninja or zombie, your ex or Superman, and you'll have to use every ounce of superhumanity you have not to throw shade as far as the remains of Krypton. Word of advice. No matter how much you're grieving or lonely, do not make out with the plasma energy being who also happens to be his teammate. Trust me, no one wants to be known as a super douche. Worse than even all of this is the moment you realize you've made a career of righting wrongs and your love is the one thing you can never fix. Maybe you'll wonder about a dozen faces you've seen him with once before deciding on the one that looks least like yours. But more likely, she'll be the last survivor of the plane crash you happen to be saving today. In that moment, you'll desperately unwish all your greatness at once. Pray not to be burdened with a broken heart and a call to goodness, or at least for the love of God, not both at the same time. Remember, it's only panic. There's still entire worlds on fire out there. Don't let them burn just for this.
Fantastic again, just knocking them out of the park. Where did this come from? Tell me about this poem and where.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead.
Real quick plug. It does appear in Freeze Ray issue 9 3/4, which is the editor issue of Freeze Ray Literary Magazine. So if anybody's interested in looking up the lines to that, that is available online. But yeah, this, yeah, so I have another poem called Love Notes. That's kind of the one I'm known for, which is kind of like a really bittersweet love poem, very vulnerable. And this poem was kind of like a combination of like both my nerdy side and both like, sometimes you got to be petty.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes you don't, it's not the time to be like, you know, soft and like talking about apologies.
Right.
You gotta
right.
call somebody out. So yeah, that's definitely where it came from. Also the idea of what happens when you get involved with somebody in very small circles.
Right. Right. Just wonderful. I love what you write about it. I love how you encapsulate your feelings in different formats and think about how to say things in a way that what am I trying to say? I think that what I'm trying to say is that it's so mature to find a way to say what you want to say so that other people will be interested in it because of the format that you choose. And I think that you're excellent at that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. God, definitely. Like it. That means a lot.
So Freeze Ray,
put that on my resume.
Talked about Freeze Ray, and I know that Freeze Ray is a big part of your life. Tell me about Freeze Ray poetry and where we can get a hold of it and what it's all about.
Yes, definitely. So freezeraypoetry.com. We are a literary magazine dedicated to poems and also art and some fiction as well. About pop culture, which spans the gamut. People typically ask, like, oh, does that only mean, like, video games and comics? No, it means, like, poems about bands that, you know, like, you're really interested in, or, you know, what do you think the life of a movie star is? And, yeah, I think it's been a really great experience to be on the other side, you know, as a lot of poets you know, who are especially trying to get their work published. You know, you see it from that side and you think like, oh, let me get this deadline or let me. And, you know, like I think especially for somebody like me, I tend to think like, oh, there's like a million great poems that are being submitted. And then there's mine, which is not to say that we don't like get great poems. We get fantastic poems. But, you know, like it runs the gamut, right? Like, and so it's been very interesting, like, on the other side. Also to see, like, to know what the frustration of an editor is, to be like, you have your name on this poem, and you, like, clearly didn't read our directions, or, you know, like, that's, I think it's been really helpful to understand, like, what other people, what other editors of other magazines are going for, and, like, the idea of curating a magazine as well. A couple issues ago, we also had the all women and non-binary issue, and that was really important. Shout out to our editor in chief, Rob Sturma, for coming to editor Gray Rose and I and saying, you know, hey, I want to have this space, and I want y'all to take the reins with that. I think that was really meaningful, especially, like I said at the top of the show, since, you know, like women in kind of nerdy culture typically don't experience, you know, like the best reception. It was super important to have that. And also just like to see all the work come in from all these like women and non-binary writers, which can, you know, since we read blind, it's, you know, like you can't always tell. And so you try to be intentional about that. But, like, knowing for that submission that, like, all of it was, like, what you're looking for and, like, trying to get more of. That was definitely, yeah. So, yeah, like, it's not just poems about comics, although I love me some poems about comics.
mm-hmm. So, excuse me, if people want to submit to FreezeRay, how would they do that?
Yes, there is a submission button on the website. If you go to freezeraypoetry.com, we're also on Twitter, we're also on Facebook. Yeah, if you go to the website, click the submissions tab, there's all the information about fiction, poetry, or any art, and like everything that we need is on there. Like just read the page and you will know exactly
mm-hmm.
what we want.
All right, perfect. Excuse me. And also, I wanted to, before we run out of time here today, talk about Black Nerd Problems and
yeah.
you know, what it's like to be the contributing staff writer for that, because it works nicely as an offshoot of FreezeRay in some ways.
So it's actually, I guess my interest, I would say, is an offshoot, but they're definitely two separate entities. So Black Nerd Problems was founded by poets Will Evans and Omar Holman.
Mm-hmm.
And really just as a space, I mean, it's not, we're not the only space that does this, but as a space that maybe has had a lot more curated writers as part of our staff. A lot of the people on the staff also happen to be poets too.
Mm-hmm.
But really I think, it's been important too, as a space that's very conscious of the intersections we've talked about. And I think there are ways that, there are spaces that maybe aren't always when we're talking about comics, especially since it's only been, 2 years for Black Nerd Problems, for, a site this young, to be so aware of its politics and the ways in which people are affected by the different kind of nerdy medium. I think that's definitely been something that's pretty incredible. For me, definitely kind of going back, the conversation we had at the top of the show with the poetry versus the columnist, definitely I didn't expect it to be another outlet, but it has been to talk about all these things and to also kind of reaffirm people in a way that maybe my poetry can't, which I think is important. It's important to have those different mediums.
Indeed it is. We're coming into the end of the show now. I want to thank you so much for being here today, Lauren. You're
thank
a fantastic
you.
Writer. And I am thrilled to have had you today. I truly am. Next week, we're going to be on a Easter hiatus, so we're not going to be here. But tune in the week after next week, and we will have more of the wonderful writers that we feature here on Spoken Heard. And so, without further ado, if I could introduce one last time, Ms. Lauren Bullock.
Bento Against Invisibility. My soul has grown deep like the rivers, has geographic power. I saw it as a girl, but didn't know I was taking in myself. Say, I have felt this before. It's soft, human, a splash quite unnoticed, and how similar that world bleeds song. Before dawn reaches in, before you turn the page, or a woman, all the women who could have known me. To tell her glories with a faithful tongue, I will claim poetry as my own unseen kingdom, making them hard to place among so many words. There are not enough words. Grief and anguish won't let my body say. Sometimes we big girl poems, stories, curse more than just endure like unpicked fruit. No matter when and how many times she broke the white man's rule, she, like a restless bird, moonmarked and touched by sun, it is this woman's skin that covers me. All of it, the heart.
Mm. Thank you again, Lauren. This is Spoken
Heard.
Thank you. I'm Susan Dobie Chase. Until next week, be kind to one another.